I'm going to be very real about a few issues going on in the world today, and it might mean that you have some questions, it might mean that you kind of are offended, hopefully not, but I am more than willing to talk about any and everything that I mentioned today in more depth with you if you do have any questions or are horrified, hopefully not, but, you know, we'll see. And I want to talk to you today, as Beth said, about a story that you've probably heard 100 times before and that you probably know off by heart. But I want to approach it in a new and exciting way, hopefully, and so that it can teach us something new about the God that we love and serve. So if you're reading from the blue Bibles in the chairs, then if you want to turn to page 1042 and read along with me starting at verse 30. In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he put the man on his own donkey and brought him to an inn and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.'" Now, if, like me, you had anything to do with church growing up, whether it's Sunday school or youth group, you've probably heard that this is the story about how you should treat your neighbour, and that your neighbour is everybody. And that's good, and I don't want to detract from that at all today. In fact, I want to twist this parable in a way that we're going to look into it as a way of hardcore loving your neighbour, going the extra mile, if you will. And I want to do this by asking one simple question today. What if you're not meant to be the Good Samaritan? What if you are the guy dying by the side of the road? A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and when he was attacked by robbers, they stripped him of his clothes and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. A man or a woman was going about their ordinary lives, minding their own business, trying to be a good Christian, when life came along and punched 7 bells out of them. Has anyone ever felt like that? I know I have. I have been going about life sometimes, and I've been trying to do my best for God and for his church, working hard for a nice life, when something comes out of left field and completely takes me out. You're left metaphorically lying by the side of the road, wondering if you can ever get up. And I'll give you this little nugget for free if you didn't already know it today. If you do feel like that, you're not the only one. There are so many things that are coming along and punching us in the gut as we try to follow God. And as a youth worker, I tend to hear more about what's going on in young people's lives than I do in adults' lives. A lot of the stuff I read to do with Christian ministry is a lot to do with young people, and my focus is really on learning about their issues and trying to be as good at my job as I can be for them. So if you see a grumpy teenager and you wonder, what's up? What's bothering them? Why are they down by the side of the road? These are a few things that may have kicked them to the curb that day. Maybe it's that themselves or their friends are more likely to self-harm than any generation that came before them. Maybe linked to that, it's because teenagers, on average, have higher stress levels than inpatients in asylums in the 1950s. Maybe it's the fact that a boy by the age of 12 is at an 80% risk, there's an 80% chance that he would have already been watching porn, starting at about 8 years old. And if they're a girl, then it's 13 by the time 60% of them have watched porn. Maybe it's that though they are considered to be generally more intelligent than any generation that came before them, rather than be praised, they're being told that tests are too easy and made to work harder. Maybe it's because they are more likely to be living in poverty than anybody else in the last 30 years. Or maybe it's because if they're being bullied, it no longer stops at the school gates or the front door because it's happening 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year on their phones. And if we take young people as an example throughout this sermon, we can see that it's so easy for us and for me to offer up what I like to call church solutions. But today, I want to show you why, thousands of years ago, Jesus knew that that just wouldn't work. A priest happened to be going down the same road when he saw the man and passed by on the other side. Back in the day, the priest was the wise man, the top dog. He knew what was what and he had all the answers. But he doesn't save the man by the side of the road. And I would be so bold as to say that not just this church, but many churches have crossed by the side of, to the other side of the road when they see certain messes in this world. If it can't be neatly put into a church box and can't be explained away by the Bible, then most of the time we don't want to touch it. And that's not good enough. Jesus time and time again shows us that he was down to get his hands metaphorically dirty with the outcasts of this world, with the people that society, including our dear priest, in this story, would rather die than be seen in public with. He hung out with the whores and the traitors. He hung out with the smelly fisherman and the local crazy lady. Do we? Because I'll put my hand up and say that I have one non-Christian friend. She's a girl called Holly. I've known her since I was 11. And we try and see each other as often as possible, but we just don't get to. We're both very busy people. But she is my only non-Christian friend. And sure, I have a pretty good relationship with my local big issue seller, and I am more than happy to sit down with a homeless person and have a chat. But that's easy, isn't it? Like, it looks good if people see the local youth worker buying the homeless McDonald's. What about when it doesn't look good? Am I showing God's love to those on the edge of society? What about the refugees and the migrants that right now feel so unsafe in this country and unwelcome? What about the transgender or homosexual teen that is four times more likely to be kicked out of his house than anybody else? What about those Jews and Muslims that are experiencing a rise of hate crime at the moment? What about the alcoholics of this world and the addicts? Or do I see people like that and think that I might get some stick at church if I'm seen talking to them? I'll leave that to someone else. You see, our neat church box isn't going to cut it anymore. There are issues too big and too fast moving. We've got to dig our teeth into the practical side of the gospel. Because there are thousands and thousands of people lying by the side of the road, just like we are. And they look up and they see the church approaching and they think they're safe. But they get ignored or they get treated badly and they sink back down. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place, saw him and passed by on the other side of the road. Levites have been around forever. They were a tribe, so ever since the tribes happened, Levites have been around. They know the history, they know the traditions, they've got it all sorted out. They could tell you back to front any which way, the way things had always been done. And I, more as a plea than anything else, want to tell you this, that if you ever have the privilege of a young person coming up to you and telling you what they're facing in life, please don't try and solve it with something that's worked for you when you were a teenager, because the world is just too different now. For my dissertation, wrote about the differences in the church between ages and why we seem to have such a lack of young adults. And one of the things I noticed when I was doing my research for my dissertation is that between me being 10 and now, which is only 14 years, Beth Maxim, thank you very much. Between that time, we've gone from having VHS video players to live streaming movies on a laptop or onto your phone, or which is in your pocket. And it's crazy. That's such a big leap in 14 years. And in the same time, for my mum growing up, we had VHSs, and that was it. And that was a big deal, but that was it. And so the world has moved too fast. It's gone too far. And it's moving at such a fast pace, that the issues that we're dealing with now are so different than any that have come before it, that our stock answers, my stock answers, me saying things that helped me out when I was 14, aren't even relevant anymore. A few weeks ago, in Bluewater Shopping Centre, a shop called Misguided had a pink neon sign up in the middle of the shop that said, "Send me nudes." The shop mainly targets young women aged 13 to 19, and it made me so angry. I and so many of my youth work friends work our butts off to try and make sure young girls do not think that they need to send men naked images of themselves to get them to like them. And here was a shop that is so popular among teenage girls, completely and utterly normalising that behaviour. And the youth work community, I'm happy to say, was not silent. A petition was made, and within 24 hours, the sign was covered and then later taken down. We made sure that the righteous voice was heard. The Levite walked by on the other side, not having the skills or the desire to get his hands dirty. But the church can't do the same. Why? Because at some point or another, we were all the man dying by the side of the road. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey and brought him to an inn to take care of him. In my kind of version of this parable, the Samaritan is Jesus, if that's not already clear. I just want to tell that to you now. And he took pity on us. He helped us, and he paid our debt. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said, "and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." In another version, I think it's in the ESV version, it says, "I will pay the debt in full when I return." At no point in this story does a Samaritan ask the man to acknowledge the help that he was given, to take back the mean things his people had said about the Samaritan people, or to say thank you. The important thing was that the man lived. The Samaritan probably went back to his people, and when they heard about what he had did, they probably berated him. "Don't you remember what Jews say about us? Don't you remember that they're mean about us? Why didn't you just let him die? Why did you help him?" And maybe the next time the good Samaritan encountered a Jew who was abusive towards him, it might have stung a little bit more. But none of that stopped him, because the important thing was that the man lived. Jesus didn't wait for us to be perfect before he saved us. He just filled the gap. And when the Samaritan says, "Look, here's some money and I'll come back to pay whatever debt he incurs," he's basically saying that as ill as that man gets, I've got this. That's what Jesus did. When he came to earth and died on that cross, he said, "No matter what sin you commit, I've got this." He gave us grace that is so illogical that we struggle to grasp it. We can never live up to its potential, and that's okay. But it doesn't mean we don't try. I've spoken lots before about how nothing we do makes us deserve grace, so we don't need to be burdened by it. Grace is not a burden. It's a license to be as lovingly audacious as possible. The grace that you and I have been shown means that we can and should stretch out our hands to the marginalised and the messy. We should open our homes to the smelly and the unpolite. We should open up our church to those that don't know Jesus and may never want to. Why? Because over the years, this church has got an awful reputation that breaks my heart. It's got a reputation for being mean, for being judgmental, and for being unloving. But I bet you something. If that Jewish man went back to his Jewish community and told them all about how amazing this Samaritan had been and how that Samaritan had saved his life, it would have definitely changed his opinions about Samaritans, if not the people he told. We need to be people that reflect the grace and the glory of God in such a way that the goodness of God is undeniable. Because it won't be our good Christian answers that save people. It won't be our traditions or our customs, because that's not what saved us. It is the unwavering love and grace of God that paid the cost time and time again for everything we have done wrong and everything we will ever do wrong. That is what picked us up from the side of the road. That is what healed our wounds. That is what brought us safely to a place where we could find rest. And that is what paid our debt in full. And that's what we can offer to the poor, the outcast, and the marginalized in this country. And we will get it wrong. And people will judge us, and some people will hate us. But people will see God's glory. People will see God's goodness. People will feel God's love. And that's all we can do. The rest is between them and God. We don't need to worry about it. We just need to trust God. We need to realize that we are all the man broken and beaten by the side of the road. We've all been picked up, healed, and helped. We've all had our debt paid. So we must go and do likewise. When I was writing this sermon, I was reminded about the story of the sheep and the goats. And a lot of the time, we kind of went all through my training and through being on mission and everything, people always mention about, oh, there's going to be these people that get to heaven who are going to be like, oh, I'm in heaven because of you, or I'm in heaven because of you. And I might just not be looking hard enough, but I've never found that in the Bible. I've never found that there's this great list, this Jesus going, oh yeah, when you get to heaven, loads of people will come up to you and be like, I'm here because of you. But what is in the Bible is Jesus saying, you saw me hungry and you fed me. You saw me naked and you clothed me. You saw me crying and you comforted me. You saw me marginalized and you brought me in from the cold. And I think it would be amazing if we were a church that's known for that, that cares more about people and how we best love people than about whether they believe in God. Because God is all powerful. He can show himself to people however he chooses. There are people all across the Middle East that become Christians because of dreams they have. He doesn't need us. He chooses to use us. And in this day and age, in the mess that the world is in, the world needs Christians that are going to be unapologetically loving. The world needs Christians that couldn't give a toss about how other Christians saw them, but actually went out and had meals with the people that it wasn't good to be seen with, that went into people's homes that were in the wrong part of town, that got their hands dirty or hung out with the local crazy lady. That's what the world needs from us. It needs us to get out of our Christian bubbles. And I'm speaking for myself more than anybody else, because I literally live in a Christian bubble. I went to the most Christian university I could possibly go to. I spent my gap year in the most Christian bubble I could possibly have spent it in. And I work for a church. So I'm in that bubble. But we need to break out of it, because the world needs Christians that go and talk to non-Christians, that go and talk to the messy, that go and talk to the people that hate the church. I once was having a conversation with somebody, and it comes up, I've spoken about this before, it comes up quite quickly in a conversation that I'm a Christian. I can't really hide it, because there's like, oh, what do you do? Oh, I'm a youth worker at a church. And that's like, oh, so you believe in God? I was like, well, it'd be awkward if I didn't, wouldn't it? And so it comes up quite a lot. And so I was having a conversation with somebody, and he very quickly was like, I hate Christians. I was like, you don't even know me. And he's like, well, not you. And I was like, well, I am in that box. Like, I'll put myself in that box. And we talked about why he hated Christians. And everything he said, I was like, yeah, I don't like that either. I don't like that people feel unwelcome in church. I don't like that the church seems so, like the official church, seems so fast to judge people on the actions that they make before they love them. I don't like lots of things about the church. But I love God. And he was like, yeah, but I think, you know, Jesus is a good guy. But I was like, no. It's not a but. Jesus is a great guy. Jesus was the Son of God. Jesus did amazing things. And I found more and more that the more you talked about Jesus and less about the church, the more open he was. So what's the church doing wrong? We're not being an accurate representation of the person that is the reason that we're all here. So I guess my thing today, my closing argument, if you will, is that we need to be an accurate representation of the person that picked us up from the side of the road. We need to be an accurate representation of the person that healed our wounds, that saved us by grace, and that is constantly saving us every single day. And we need to let that grace be for other people as well. We don't need to wait until somebody believes in God to have them in our church family. They can come in at any time and God will do the rest. But they need to feel welcome. They need to feel loved. And they need to know that this is home for them just as much as it is for us. So I'm going to try and do this as well. Haven't worked out how because literally I'm in the biggest Christian bubble ever. But I'm going to try and do it. This week, I want us all to go and have a conversation that is awkward. And some of us may be more awkward people than others, Beth. But, so that might be easier for Beth to have an awkward conversation than it will for anybody else. But I want us to go have an awkward conversation with somebody that it wouldn't look great, maybe, if you're having that conversation, or somebody that, you know, you don't get along with, or somebody that kind of starts a conversation by telling you that they hate what you believe in. Anything. Have an awkward conversation and get it down to the nitty-gritty. Show people that Jesus is not what the church has portrayed him to be. He's amazing and he loves them no matter what. And that is what we need to show. We need to love people no matter what. And it'll be hard. And like I said, I'm pretty sure people will hate us for it. But wouldn't the world be an amazing place if the church was known for love rather than rules? I think so. So I'm going to pray and then we're going to sing Amazing Grace because it's an absolute tune. And then you can go for coffee. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much that you saved us by your amazing grace. We thank you that you knelt down and you picked us up from the side of the road, bandaging our wounds and taking us to a safe place. And God, we thank you so much that you paid the debt in full. And we can never thank you enough for that, God. And we know that we can never do enough to deserve that. But give us the courage, give us the determination, and give us the wisdom to have those awkward conversations this week. Have conversations that we struggle with people who don't believe in you, with people who feel hurt by your people, with people that we wouldn't normally have a conversation with. Give us awkward conversations, God, that we can show your love, your mercy, and your grace more clearly to this community around us, God. Make us bearers of your love in such an undeniable way that the church and you will be known for your goodness and not for your rules, for your grace and not for your wrath. We thank you and we praise you for today, God, and we just pray that you bless us now as we sing this song.